This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
None of my business, I know, but how old are you? And look, before you answer, take a look at the stock market the past couple of days. See how you're feeling. We'll explain. Also, get your flu shot, will ya? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rosdahl. It is Thursday, today the 25th of October. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We will dispense with all the euphemisms right at the get-go. Roller coaster, wild ride, seesaw, gyrations, if you like. Another phrase you might use for the stock markets past couple of days, totally normal. Yes, there have been big swings, but stocks go down and stocks go up. That is admittedly the very big picture approach. Volatility in the abstract, if you will. But when you're talking about your savings or your retirement, the markets of late have been an emotional ride, we know. And how you feel might, it turns out, have a lot to do with your age. Here's Marketplace's Kimberly Adams.
Even if markets aren't predictable, people kind of are, at least when it comes to investing. Damon Jones is an economist at the University of Chicago. He says investors often don't look at the big picture when they are reacting to markets.
So you kind of build up over your lifetime exposure to different types of markets, and you place more weight on your personal experience.
That can mean age can play a role in how you react to market volatility. Gobi Balasubramanian runs his own investment management firm.
If they are a long enough investor, like, you know, if they have invested in 20 years or so, they would have a completely different perspective because they have seen the boom and bust and boom again.
But younger investors, especially those that have entered the market since the financial crisis, haven't experienced a major downturn yet. And the whiff of one can make rising interest rates in traditional or online bank accounts look good. Jennifer Myers is a financial planner at SageVest Wealth Management.
It has been a problem for younger investors to get over that fear, and I am concerned that the fear factor of an upcoming market decline could be exacerbated given the memories of 2008.
Myers says the 2% rate some banks are offering is better than the almost zero interest we've seen for years, but it's not enough for most people if you're talking about retirement planning. She says there are better returns and relative safety in the bond market.
We have been shifting to higher quality bonds over the past year or so in preparation for a down market.
She says she's also been warning clients all year the bull market won't last forever and encouraging people to check if the risk profile they have when the market is going up is one they can stomach when it goes down. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
We're going to do kind of a high concept story on tariffs and the trade war a little bit later in the program, but we are going to dig into some of the practicalities of it now. The Trump administration's tariffs on steel and aluminum and more than $250 billion worth of Chinese imports are turning up in the darndest of places, it turns out, including your water. There's an American company that sells water purification products to municipal water systems in this country, but its plant is over in China, so it's trying real hard to find a way to bypass the latest list of import taxes. But as Marketplace's Sabri Benishour reports, finding that tariff escape hatch, it's a little bit difficult right now.
You're hearing water coming from thousands of feet underneath Los Angeles.
We get about 1.5 million gallons of water out of the ground every day.
David Gould has been the engineer here at La Crescenta Valley Water District for 21 years. It provides water for four towns near L.A.
Comes through into our system here, and then we have to treat it for high nitrates.
So to treat the water for this pollutant, which, by the way, comes from fertilizer and septic systems, they pipe it through these 15-foot-tall, beige, pressurized vats full of little filter balls made of resin.
Which kind of look like beanbag chair styrofoam balls, very similar to that.
Well, pretty much all of this stuff, the resin balls, the steel pipes, it's getting more expensive. For one simple reason, tariffs. 25% tariffs on goods from China, for starters, including those filter balls. At La Crescenta, they'll need replacing in a couple years.
We anticipate the cost to be 25 to 30% more, so we're out looking at $40,000 to $50,000 extra of cost.
And 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum. The pipes are made from steel.
We've seen actual quotes from our companies that we buy the steel pipes saying that they've also increased their price by 25%.
These price hikes are getting passed directly to consumers in the form of rate increases on their water bills.
So we're seeing about a 2% increase, primarily due to the increase in our materials cost.
The company that produces the little water-purifying resin balls is called Purelite. It sells to municipal water systems around the country that serve millions of consumers. It is a U.S. company, but it owns a factory in China. Jacob Brody is vice president. He says one way to get around the tariffs would be to make the filter resin here.
To build a new facility in the United States will cost tens of millions of dollars and take 2 to 3 years.
His factory in China serves customers all over the world. He says building an additional factory just for the U.S. doesn't make economic sense.
We couldn't afford to shut the factory down in China.
Meanwhile, he's applied with the U.S. Trade Representative to be excluded from the tariff. Attorney Richard Weiner is representing Purelite.
The problem in all this is there's no timeline for USTR to decide on our motion for reconsideration.
The U.S. Trade Representative's office has received around 5,000 applications to get exemptions from just a small piece of the China tariffs. The Commerce Department has received almost 36,000 applications for exemptions to steel and aluminum tariffs. Ambassador Miriam Shapiro is a former Deputy U.S. Trade Representative.
This is such an unprecedented situation. As a small agency, USTR simply does not have the resources necessary to try and process the current backlog of requests for exemptions.
In some ways, Purelite is lucky because at least it can apply for an exemption. Most companies don't have that option under administration rules. Attorney Richard Weiner says he has no idea whether he'll get a response to his application in weeks or months or years. USTR didn't respond when asked about this.
In our case, it's really rather urgent. The goal of the Trump tariffs is to punish China. But here we have a situation where the effect of the tariff is solely to harm Americans, not Chinese. So we're kind of caught in a crossfire.
With no clear timetable for getting out. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, basically, got back everything they lost yesterday. Details, numbers, you know the drill. Here's a phrase we're going to be hearing more of the hotter the planet gets: climate liability lawsuits. The Attorney General of the state of New York has filed the most recent one, alleging ExxonMobil defrauded its investors by misrepresenting the risks to its business, the costs, in other words, of climate change regulations. And a group of students is hoping the Supreme Court will let its case go forward next week. Those students claim the government's inaction on climate change, global warming, violates their rights. Janet Babin has more now on the courts and the climate.
The suits come at climate change from a variety of different angles. New York's suit against Exxon is a straight-up corporate fraud case, says Michael Berger of the Sabin Center for Climate Change Law at Columbia University.
It's a case that's about a company that told investors one thing, but was in fact doing something else.
Exxon calls the allegations baseless. At least 9 cities and counties have sued fossil fuel companies to help defray the costs of adapting to climate change. And then there's the lawsuit filed by 21 young Americans that could go to trial next week. It alleges that the government should do more to protect Americans from the effects of fossil fuels. There's been an uptick in lawsuits like these, in part because of improved scientific techniques, says Berger.
Demonstrated methodologies through which you can trace global greenhouse gas emissions to the fossil fuel companies.
There's also been a proliferation of electronic documents that can reveal internal company communications. Carol Muffet with the Center for International Environmental Law compares it to the internal documents that implicated tobacco companies.
Much of the focus has been on, you know, a growing awareness of the difference between what these companies knew and what they told the public, what they told investors, what they told regulators.
Muffett says these lawsuits are moving faster than the ones that caught up with Big Tobacco. In New York, I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
There was a report out from American Express earlier this year, the credit card people, about the state of women-owned businesses in this economy that had a whole lot of interesting data points in it. The one that applies to this next interview is this. Women are starting on average 1,821 businesses a day in this country. And the reason we mention that right now is in service of this question. Where are these women making these kinds of deals and starting and running these new businesses? One answer is in co-working spaces, specifically women-focused co-working spaces. A company called The Wing is one of them. Audrey Gelman is the co-founder and CEO. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So give me the virtual radio tour, if you would. If I walk into one of The Wing locations at like 4 in the afternoon, what am I going to see?
You're going to see hundreds of women on their laptops working, taking meetings, on conference calls, having coffee dates, starting businesses. It's pretty extraordinary.
So these are not small little spaces. These are large convening spaces, I suppose, in a sense, right?
That's correct. Our largest flagship in the Soho neighborhood of New York City is going to be 20,000 square feet.
Wow. You're almost like a big box. I mean, that's crazy.
We're still small.
All right. Maybe not in big box.
But we have big plans.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Give me, first of all, the elevator pitch, right? I mean, you've gone out and you've gotten VC funding. You've been very successful at getting venture capitalists to invest in your vision. What's the pitch? What's the elevator pitch?
Sure. I mean, The Wing was inspired by history, really, and the turn of the 20th century and the sort of late 19th century. There were hundreds of women's clubs. And so they were a huge part of the suffrage movement and the overall advancement of women in this country, but they kind of died out. Our idea was to resurrect them for modern women. But, you know, the difference between women 100 years ago and women today is that women today work.
Tell me about your clientele, would you? Your customers? What do we know about them? I mean, you just introduced childcare, right? So clearly some are parents of small children.
Yes. You know, we have 6,000 members of The Wing, and we survey them constantly. About a quarter of them have kids, and that's a growing population. My co-founder, Lauren, has a 9-month-old, and watching her balance growing The Wing and being a new mom has been an eye-opening experience for me. So, yeah, we're trying to always grow with our members.
Are you making money yet? You profitable? come on. You come on the show. You got to ask that question.
Yeah. Listen, we're the traction, you know, from tapping into needs that have not been addressed and have really been neglected from women business owners. You know, it's the right thing to do. And it's also, you know, it's a great business model.
Let me back you up for a minute to the venture capital part of this. You are a woman running a woman-focused business. Venture capital is neither of those things. What was that like for you going to wherever you went, Sand Hill Road, Menlo Park, or wherever, and making this pitch? Were VCs receptive? Well, they were receptive, but I guess what was the reception you got is the question.
Yeah, the statistics of how many women-founded companies receive venture capital funding they're really abysmal. Only about 3% of all venture capital dollars go into businesses founded by women. As a woman going out to raise tens of millions of dollars, it's incredibly intimidating. It's intimidating to know those statistics. It's intimidating to walk into a room full of men in suits around a boardroom table. Our initial, you know, seed round was very challenging just because there wasn't anything that existed like this and we didn't have proof of concept yet. And there were, frankly, a lot of men who just said, like, I just don't get it. You know, I just don't get the product.
Do you foresee a day, and I grant you that it feels like we're a long way from it now with Me Too and all of that, but do you foresee a day where this company is not needed, where your services aren't required anymore because society has progressed?
You know, I think that that's the goal in some ways. You know, let's put it this way. from a very young age, you know, even if it's not as overt as something like Me Too, women learn to shrink themselves and to sort of take up less space. You know, so we believe that they're getting these cues, you know, in big ways and small ways, and that it's so important for spaces like The Wing to exist.
Audrey Gelman, co-founder and CEO of The Wing. Audrey, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up.
The United States is not allowed to unilaterally just ratchet up the tariffs on China.
Oh, well, I guess that settles it, right? Yeah, no. First, let's do the numbers. All right, here you go. The rebound after a dismal day yesterday. Dow Industrial's up 401 points today, 1.6%, 24,984. The S&P 500 shot up 49 points, about 1.8%. 2705. The NASDAQ rocketed 209 points higher, just shy of 3%, 73.18. The slew of decent earnings reports apparently does wonders for jittery investors. Who knew? Twitter set the tone. The social media giant said it sold more ads last quarter than analysts had expected. Shares flew up nearly 15.5%. Tesla raised up more than 9% today after unexpectedly robust earnings indicated the troubled electric vehicle company may have turned the corner. Thank you, Model 3. Microsoft. Software company, might have heard of it, rose almost 6% today after first quarter profits topped what analysts said forecast. We mentioned New York State has sued ExxonMobil over climate change disclosures. Meh. Oil giant increased 0.8% today. Bonds rose, yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 3.12%. You're listening to Marketplace. Sign up for our daily e-newsletter by October 31st, and you could be in for a Halloween treat. We're giving away 10 Marketplace treat bags filled with some great swag, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what goes into bringing you the program every single day, a rundown that I will sign personally. Subscribe today at marketplace.org for your chance to win, and good luck.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Look, payday's awesome, but running payroll, calculating taxes and deductions, staying compliant, that's not easy. Unless, of course, you have Gusto. Gusto is a simple online payroll and benefits tool built for small businesses like yours. Gusto gets your team paid while automatically filing your payroll taxes. Plus, you can offer benefits like 401k, health insurance, and workers' comp. Just for listening today, you also get 3 months free. Go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Get a flu shot. Seriously, I didn't last year, and it was miserable. Also, you getting a shot might help protect those who, for whatever reason, can't. Retail pharmacies and grocery stores are doing their best to get people on board, offering incentives like gift cards and discounts if you get a flu shot. But why are they doing that? From WFAE in Charlotte, North Carolina, Alex Olgan reports.
Before getting the flu vaccine this year, I did some research. At a nearby CVS and Walgreens, I could get a discount of $5 or $10 if I spent a certain amount. At local grocery store chain Harris Teeter, I could save some money on gas. Since the Affordable Care Act requires insurers to cover the full cost of the shot, any incentive I got would save me money on some necessities. I ended up going to a Publix store in Charlotte, where the company advertised a $10 gift card for the shot. I filled out some information and moved my left sleeve so pharmacist Justin Taylor could give me the vaccine.
So what we'll then do is grab the deltoid region and kind of pinch up.
Publix wouldn't tell me how much of an increase it has seen in customers coming in for shots since it started offering the promotion. But Taylor says,
yeah, we've been super busy this year, especially with the flu shot promotion we're doing. It's kind of a nice way to get our foot in the door with people so we can kind of get other immunizations and identify kind of gaps in care for people.
Nursing student Lexine Merrill came into this store to get the flu shot after driving by a billboard advertising the deal.
I saw that. I was like, well, I need to get it done. So came in here.
She tells me she also plans to do a little grocery shopping. And I ask if she normally goes grocery shopping here.
Every once in a while I do, but not very much.
The theory is a flu shot promotion could help change that. That's according to Bert Flickinger III, a retail analyst with the Strategic Resource Group. He says beyond the money she'll spend on groceries this day, stores are betting people like her will start to get medicines there.
Prescription loyalty is the greatest loyalty in all of retail.
Flickinger says shoppers who get the flu shot tend to be health conscious, more likely to fill prescriptions, and buy over-the-counter medications. He adds gaining these customers could help grocery stores cut into the big retail pharmacy market.
This is the perfect opportunity for the food and drug combo retailers to competitively capitalize.
And for their part, the pharmacy chains look at the flu shot as a gateway to becoming primary care centers. That is, places where people come for minor illnesses like an ear infection or colds.
They're trying to beef up those services. And one easy way to get someone into the primary care clinic is with a flu shot.
That's Robert Field, a professor of health management and policy at Drexel University. We reached him via Skype. He says these companies are trying to get into both delivering healthcare and offering insurance to cover it. He points to the recently approved merger between insurer Aetna and retail pharmacy giant CVS.
Some stores are looking to add other immunizations, pneumonia, for instance, shingles. Those are particularly important for Medicare-age patients who are likely to be big consumers of pharmaceutical products.
In its annual report, CVS said retail pharmacists are shifting from primarily filling prescriptions to providing services, including vaccinations and patient counseling. And Field says offering things like flu shots can be cheaper for the big company than for the small doctor's office. The CDC estimates each year the flu costs about $4.6 billion in direct medical expenses. That includes the cost of hospitalizations for people who get sick and doctor's visits. In Charlotte, I'm Alex Olgan for Marketplace.
Let us review for just a moment here the progression of the Sino-American trade war. Earlier this year, the United States put tariffs on solar panels and dishwashers from China and other countries, to be sure. Then it was steel and aluminum, also China and other countries. Now, though, thanks to the Trump administration's focus on Beijing, it is taxing fully half of everything that we buy from China. All of that has led to retaliatory tariffs from China and other countries on our exports, agriculture mostly. The whole thing happened so fast, you might reasonably conclude we could get out of it just as fast. But as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, game theory suggests otherwise.
Game theory is a way scientists and mathematicians think about human behavior and interaction. What should I do based on what you do? Should I trust you? And what do I do if you break that trust? Before this trade war, the U.S. and China had some trust. Both were members of a free trade club known as the World Trade Organization. And then trust broke down. Trade professor Jennifer Hillman at Georgetown Law says a decade ago, Beijing began requiring U.S. companies there to hand over their secrets.
Their forced technology transfer violates the commitments China made when it joined the WTO, that its level of IP theft is a violation of the intellectual property provisions.
Washington, meanwhile, broke trust by taxing Chinese imports this year.
Under the WTO rules, the United States is not allowed to unilaterally just ratchet up the tariffs on China.
Game theory suggests a couple things. One is it's hard to establish trust when it's broken. And two, a trade war is actually a rational thing for countries to do. It's in their self-interest. Here's how. NYU business prof Arun Sundararajan says the U.S. interest is to tax Chinese imports, whether Beijing responds or not. Either way, Washington makes money.
If China imposes tariffs, the U.S.'s best response is to say, well, we're going to tax your imports as well. If China doesn't, then the best response of the U.S. is also to say, well, you know, they're not doing anything. Let me sort of collect from them.
Now, if you think game theory is just a theory, you're taking on Nobel economist John Nash. He helped to develop this. Nash entered the popular imagination in 2001 when Russell Crowe played him in the movie A Beautiful Mind.
Find a truly original idea. That's the only way I'll ever distinguish myself. It's the only way that I'll ever...
matter.
He came up with something called the Nash Equilibrium, which suggests that a trade war of self-interest is actually the norm and that cooperation and free trade is the exception.
Both countries imposing tariffs is the Nash Equilibrium of the game.
To Sundararajan, this means a trade war could go on a while, as in 10 years. Now, game theory does allow for things to get shaken up. But it takes something dramatic to disrupt things, say, political change.
Could be the election of a new president in the United States. Now, that unfortunately, has to be coupled with a similar willingness to negotiate on China's part.
Or outside parties, say other countries or the WTO, could bring the U.S. and China together and create space for trust, says Jennifer Hillman at Georgetown Law. They could say, listen, here's a new trade agreement that takes away tariffs, provides new customers for your exports, and outside third parties will be the free trade police.
So it's giving a little bit of political cover to China to say we need to make these reforms in order to remain a member in good standing of the WTO. We need to do these reforms.
And it provides political cover for D.C. as well. Someone else made me do this. But she agrees with Sundararajan that a sudden outbreak of trust is not imminent, and that this trade war, as game theory suggests, could go on a while. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today about which chocolate lovers will be understandably irritated. Hershey's said today prices are going up next year. The company's freight costs have spiked apparently on a shortage of trucking capacity. They're still counting on Halloween to be a winner, though. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrials up 401 points today, 1.6%. NASDAQ, 209 points to the good. That is just shy of 3%. S&P 549 points higher, 1.8%. John Buckley, Eve Epstein, Stephen Gregory, John Gordon, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Deirdre Debke. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.